And that is the Chieftains. You are listening to Portsmouth Community Radio, 106.1 FM, WSCALP Portsmouth. We are Portsmouth Community Radio. Our phone number here, 603-430-9722. And we're right here at 909 Islington Street, Suite 1, Portsmouth. Check us out on the web, WSCAFM.org. Steve Kerrigan of Local Folk, he's away again this week. He will be back next Monday night. But Steve wonderfully, thoughtfully, has an interview all recorded. So I should have had it queued up beforehand. So the interview is with Danny Spooner. And I think we're going to get right to it. I'll be looking for a place to break in that to do the weather. And, well, actually, why don't I just do the weather right now? Let everybody know what's up.
One morning in the month of May is from me caught astray. All at the dawning of the day, I met with the charming maid. All at the dawning of the day, I met with the charming maid. Good morn, fair maid, fair weather, says I, good morning to you now. The maid replied, kind sir, she cried, I've lost me spotted cow. The maid replied, kind sir, she cried, I've lost me spotted cow. No longer weep, no longer mourn, ye cow's not lost me dear. I saw her down in yonder grove, come love and I'll show you where. I saw her down in yonder grove, come love and I'll show you where. Well, in the grove we spent some time, we thought it passed too soon. At night we homeward made our way, while brightly shone the moon. At night we went our way, it brightly shone the moon. But if I cross the flowery dale, or for to view the plough, she comes and cries, me noble swain, I've lost me spotted cow. She comes and says, me noble swain, I've lost me spotted cow.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Local Folk. I'm your host, Steve Kerrigan, and today, as my song suggested, I have an awesome guest. His name is Danny Spooner. Right now we're not in the studio. We're down at the Indian Neck Festival, and he was kind enough to agree to allow me to chat with him. Danny, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Now, where are you from?
Originally, I'm from the East End of London.
Okay, okay.
But I've lived for the last 52 years in Australia.
In Australia. Okay. So I was listening to the accent. I can't tell. Sounds kind of Australian to me.
Well, I'm sure by now it should be, but it's really still a London accent with an overlay of Australian.
Oh, okay. Yeah. A little bit of both. It's hybrid.
Because they're not terribly far apart. Actually, the convicts who first went to Australia.
Yeah.
Many of them came from many of the early ones came from London.
Okay.
And what was known at the time as the flesh talk. The talk that was used by the, which was essentially Cockney slang.
Okay.
So rhyming slang and all that. So in Australia, they talk about snakes, they talk about Joe Blakes and things like that, because that was very much the way the Londoners used to speak.
Okay, so you called it Cockney slang?
Yeah.
Okay, and so you're saying that that's, just for the, I don't know too much about it, but I've heard that, yeah, they make up different words that mean the
Cockney
same thing.
Cockney is a dialect within London that comes from, to be a Cockney, you're supposed to be born within the sound of Bow Bells. That's the Church of St. Mary Le Bow. They probably haven't rung for 400 years, but that's not written in there. But from that area is this sort of way of speaking. And one of the things, well, they actually spoke three sort of languages, if you like. There was an approximation to English. And then there was rhyming slang, which was like that Joe Blake's Roundy Houses and that sort of stuff. And then there was Thieves' Cant, which was a mix of many of the languages that were in London, like Yiddish, German, all of this. And that was a real mix. That was like...
And so that stuff translated over to Australian?
Certainly what they called the Flash Talk. There was a convict called Jim Bow, Flash Jim Bow, who was a forger, and among other things. And he actually wrote a dictionary of the Flash Talk, as he called it.
Hmm.
And it's really quite interesting.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, you're a folk musician, but are you more of a historian, or are you... sounds like you know a lot of stories.
I grew up with the tradition. My grandmothers and my uncles and aunts, and they all sang this sort of stuff that I do now. In fact, I didn't even know it was folk music.
Okay, well, this is was going to be my next question. Was did you grow up with the music? And it sounds like from your grandparents and then your folks as well.
Yeah, my parents and uncles and aunts and everybody.
Now, tell me about what did that look like? I mean, was it just every Sunday you got together and sang music? I mean, how did that happen?
It was a bit like, for example, whenever they had a gathering, whenever they went around to somebody's house, like for a party or something like that. That was one place where it happened.
Okay.
But if your aunt and uncle went around to visit your nan, you know, you were expected to sing as a kid.
You were expected to?
Oh, yeah.
And what did they say? You have to learn the song to sing?
No, you knew songs. And they would say, well, it's your turn to sing.
Oh,
and,
really?
And when we were kids, we would have the evening meal.
Mm-hmm.
You call it supper. We used to call it tea. And then the kids would wash up. And then you'd come back to the table. And it was once around the table. You did a song or a poem, and then you went to bed.
Hmm.
So that was when we were really young.
Yeah.
And so that was it. So you were learning songs all the time. So wherever you went, people were singing, so you picked songs up and they stuck. And then sometimes then when you went, and then they said, well, it's your turn to sing.
So I mean, here we are at Indian Neck, which I'm sure is like many folk festivals. There's a bunch of people sitting around a circle singing.
Yeah, this is a lovely, very, very different to some extent, because there's no formal. Even the concert tonight, one concert for the weekend, is not formal.
No, not exactly.
They just say, write your name down, and everybody gets one song. Or something less than 4 minutes.
Well, so in a way, I mean,
It's
exactly the same thing, but like a bigger
session.
Version.
Yeah, it's like the session where you just go around in a circle.
Yeah. That's great. So this makes sense to you. Yeah, I mean, because I grew up and there wasn't that musical tradition.
Mm. But this is what's so lovely when you see, I mean, what I'm seeing now in Australia is we've got huge number of really good young people who play fiddles. But what we don't have is the young people coming through singing traditional music. And what we've got here this weekend is some young people who are fantastic traditional singers.
In many different traditions.
Though. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and they've gone back to the tradition to learn it. And they're singing that as their thing, so rather than the singer-songwriter or let me just copy the latest pop song.
Okay, so what you're saying is that there's a lot of, you know, new fiddle players, let's say, in Australia, but they're playing modern music.
No, they're playing good traditional stuff, but what we're not getting is the singers.
Oh, the singers.
We're not getting the singers coming through. We're getting like a plethora of singer-songwriters.
Oh, singer-songwriters. Okay,
but we're not getting the young people coming through who want to sing like Max, Max Goddard, Godfrey.
Okay.
Who's here, you know, he just blew me away. And he's gone back to the tradition of that Lomax collected. He went back to Lomax's collections and listened and learned. And he was singing like last night stuff.
Oh, it's some of that prison stuff?
What?
Was that him?
Unbelievable.
Is that who you're talking about?
That tall, thin guy with the red hair.
Yeah. Oh.
And he plays fiddle.
Yeah, he does.
And he sings harmony.
Yeah. He's a rock star.
He's great. Fabulous.
But, I mean, let's talk about Australian traditional music for a moment. Have you collected a lot of Australian traditional music? Because, I mean, the stuff that Max was singing was kind of southern music, but over in Australia, are they singing Australian traditional music?
They're singing white Australian traditional
white
music.
White Australian. Don't sing, yeah.
There's no... We don't have people singing Aboriginal music.
Okay.
The real people.
That would be the real...
Of the time,
yeah.
That are Aboriginal people. Yeah. There are some people, some Aboriginals, who mm-hmm. sing it.
Sing...
The tradition.
Traditional Aboriginal
their
music.
Their tradition.
But it's a different language.
Completely. Actually, they had 500 languages.
500 languages.
Because each, practically every tribe had its own language. But
it makes it tough.
So we don't get... It does, yeah. So we don't get to hear too much of that. There, occasionally you might go to a festival and there'll be an Aboriginal group or an Aboriginal guy. But the tradition in Australia is... Firstly, the Celtic, Anglo-Celtic stuff that was brought out by the first settlers, like the convicts, the first settlers.
Yeah.
And then after a short period of time, it started to be people from other parts of Europe.
Okay.
And so now we, not unlike America, have got a vast collection of people, I think 20 or 30 different nationalities.
Okay.
Maybe even more.
Okay, so you
and
can,
they've all got their own.
So you can pick. I mean, if you want to learn traditional music in Australia, you could learn traditional American music, let's say. Or,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Or there's similarities in the sense that it's kind of a melting pot over there as well,
exactly,
so to speak.
Exactly, exactly. And you get the fusions of one and another. You know, that's often happening with younger people. They're getting into sort of having. Sort of groups, electric groups, and they're doing a fusion of sort of Baltic rhythms with English words drawn on different... And
like
it's
that.
Really quite fascinating. But if you are interested in hearing the tradition straight...
Yes.
You're going to be looking hard to find that.
Maybe there's room for all of it.
Of course there is.
Yeah.
Always has been. I mean... You've got to acknowledge, we have to acknowledge that the tradition will not continue unless it's being refreshed all the time.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, and that brings up another question. Like, for yourself, so you grew up in the tradition, so, mm-hmm. but everybody tries to reach, not everybody, most people try to reach out
mm-hmm.
to the unwashed masses or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, so to speak, you know, but
yeah.
the extent to which they reach out varies, you know, wildly. Some people reach out by going electric.
Yeah, yeah.
But
this morning, and he's a very nice man, Wally, and he talks about bridges, and he says, you know, and he's perfectly right, that people like Kingston Trio, the Weavers, Peter, Paul and Mary, all of these people were bridges to younger generations. They were singing traditional songs which they'd learned, and they were singing those, and they were singing them for younger people, and people said, oh, that's interesting. Now, you would, some people, you know, purists would say, well, Kingston Trio weren't folk music, and people weren't, well, they were. They were just singing their version of it. What happens is that the people hear that, and they like it. Then they say, well, where did I get this?
Right.
Where can I go and get it?
Yep.
And then somebody says, well, if you go to Smithsonian or if you go da 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 da, there are books, there are CDs, there are records of collections. Yeah. Go listen to traditional singers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, frankly, some of the Smithsonian stuff is a little bit hard to listen to unless you've already been initiated.
Of course.
You know, unless you've already caught the bug.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Absolutely. Because when you go back to listen to them, I mean, the essential thing with traditional music is, I can only speak from the British tradition, but it is a story. It's the words are the essential thing. The tune carries the essential words. Now, once you start to add a guitar to that or a concertina to that, you filter it down and get a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
You add an electric band to it.
Yeah.
You change the whole sense of it.
Well, that's a good point.
But the thing is, if you've got into your electric band first,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and then you say, well, look, I want to go listen to where this stuff comes from. And you suddenly find, well, hey, this guy's singing unaccompanied.
Yeah.
And I am listening not just to the words, but I'm listening to the way he puts those words across.
Yes.
The nuances, you listen to the guy we keep talking about, young Max. I mean, some of the sounds he was making during the course of that, like illustrating the work gang.
Yes, I liked when he was doing that. I remember that. Now I have to have him on the show, but you're right. Yeah,
it would be lovely. I reckon it would be wonderful to have him.
Oh, I'm going to have to go grab him then.
What a fabulous example of a young man. You know, one of the things that drives me crackers, you know, these young kids don't do nothing. Go listen to this boy.
Yeah.
Go listen to the other young kids who are here.
Yeah.
And you've got a whole different ball game going. These kids, and he's worked hard.
Yeah, seems it. I mean, he's really developed.
He's got it. He could have come straight out of the 1850s or something.
I'm going to have to, I know. That's how I feel too. I'm going to have to ask him if he did or not. Well, I mean, you know, but they're following people like you. I don't know if you all sing similar songs, but, you know, traditional musicians, I mean, they've found them that are probably active, you know,
sure.
that are participating in this stuff the way that we're participating.
Well, it was really funny. This man, Wally, he's another guy you should interview if you get a chance. He's been around. But he told a wonderful story of John Hurt when he was collected. The first time he was collected by a white collector, a young person. And a group of young white people who had got into listening to different stuff heard this guy and on radio or something like this, and they were sitting together and maybe drinking and stuff like this, and they said, why don't we go down to Atlanta or wherever it was that he was in and see if we can find this thing. You know, and they drove down, got a car, drove down to wherever it was, stopped to the fuel station, and filling up, and the guy's black guy there, and they said to him, did John Hurt used to live here? And the guy said, why, is he dead? And they said, what? And they actually heard him.
Really?
So? And one of the boys who was there was someone who was the first guy to start importing black musicians to be heard on radio.
Huh.
It's just the most amazing story.
So they went out and did that, you know. I mean, me and my friend went down to Kentucky to try to find these bluegrass musicians, and all the towns that we went to, they just did Southern rock.
Mm.
It was all gone. You had to go to a dry town.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah, any town that had drinking was Southern rock.
Yeah,
and any
right.
dry town
yeah.
was still traditional music.
Yeah, yeah.
So you have to seek it out.
And
I mean,
you really do have to seek it, because people, you know, generally would say weird people, you know, and then you go there and there's these lots of them doing
yeah.
it. But like you say, you really got to go dig them out.
Hey, you should share a song with us if you care to.
Yeah, why not? We could do, drink good ale, drink the barrel dry. Yonder field is where I've been. I tore my shirt and I tore my skin, but I got me master's harvest in. So drink good ale, drink good ale. Drink the barrel dry. Mastery has got his corn in. It's been well mowed and it's been well thawed. We've been up each day since the break of dawn. So drink good ale. Drink good ale. Drink the barrel dry. Harvest in and harvest home. Our farmer need no longer moan. We'll have a fat hen and a bacon bone. So drink good ale. Drink good ale. Drink the barrel dry. Harvest cart has come at last. It's never been o'er and it's never been fast. It's fuller now than it's been in the past. So drink good ale. Drink good ale.
It's my kind of song.
It comes from the time when they worked in the fields, and in Britain, they would have a barrel at each end of the field as they were working through of new ale, because they make different brews during the year, and the new ale was a light beer for the summer, and they would just take a drink at the end of each row.
So take a drink at the end of each row, sort of incentive to make it to the end of the row.
Also to rehydrate.
Yeah.
Because you were sweating cobs.
Yeah. Well, it probably wasn't as high alcohol content. I don't know.
No, that's the thing. It was they called new ale. Yeah. It wasn't as concentrated. Old ale starts to get really strong.
I like to drink old ale, too. A little bit of everything, maybe. Why not?
It's all part of what we do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, how old were you when you went off to Australia?
Oh, well, I was quite old by then. I was probably 25.
Okay, so you're a Londoner.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, tried and true.
I grew up in the East End of London. I was born in the East End of London. About 3 years before the Second World War started. And
oh, really?
Yeah.
You don't seem that old to me. So you were around during the bombing?
We got moved along a couple of times. We moved house. Hitler moved house for us a couple of times.
So you were alive. Do you remember any of that?
Oh, yeah. I was nine.
Lived through that war. I mean, that's... Yeah.
Wow, when you're a kid.
Yeah, but did it seem like crazy or what? I'm sorry, I've never met anybody that was in London when they were bombing it. I mean, did you have to just move in it? Or were your parents like, hey, you know,
We got moved out. Yeah. Like, we were bombed, so we had to move.
Oh, you mean your...
The house got bombed.
Your house got bombed twice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So what happens was they just move you. They just move you down the road to one that's standing up still.
You're kidding me.
No.
So where were you in a? But this doesn't have to do with the music.
Well, we live very close to the docks.
Okay, and they were trying to bomb the docks.
They kept missing. Well, yeah, no, they when they come over, they just drop in a pattern. So they drop this side of the dock, they drop on the dock, and they drop the other side of the dock. You know.
So you get your house blown up twice.
Yeah.
That's.
Oh, a lot of people.
I know, but
as a kid, you know, as a child at that age, even though you knew what was going on, you knew there was a war on, you knew that people were getting killed. You didn't really know what killed meant.
No.
And like you'd look up in the air and you'd see dogfights. You know, and you knew you wanted to win.
Yeah.
You know. And you got to the stage where, I mean, I still sometimes do it. Somebody was, they'll hear a plane and I'll say, is that one of ours? Because you could hear the difference of the engines, you know. Yeah. You know, Junker sounded like this and a Spitfire sounded like that.
Oh, my gosh. So all right, well, you're the first person that I've met that's had dogfights going on over their head. And that's lived
a... I'll tell you a very interesting story about that, too. I was playing in the street with my brothers, and where we lived, and because when the bombers used to come over, they came over with an escort of fighter planes, and one of these planes had broken off from the thing and was just strafing in the area down. And he came down our street, and we were... my plane in the road, and I just dived on top of my two brothers. And he stopped about 50 yards one side of us and started again about 100 yards the other side of us.
You mean...
I reckon he knew that they were kids.
Oh, really?
That's the only thing I can think of. Why would he have stopped?
I don't know.
I mean, he was strafing houses.
Yeah.
We had some factories on one side, houses on the other. He was just coming down. So.
Unbelievable. Do you...
No, I don't get nightmares.
You know, I wasn't gonna. I might. You know, I mean, do you sing war songs?
I sing traditional war songs. Yeah. I sing songs about, you know, my love's in Germany or whatever. Not Germany.
You sing World War II songs?
I know a couple of World War II songs. They're not songs I don't particularly like them to sing that much.
Yeah,
I do. When I was lecturing, I always used to sing. So if I was talking about the war, I would sort of.
Did you used to lecture about that?
Yeah, when I got to Australia, I became an academic by default. I was a tug skipper in England.
Yeah, an academic by default.
Well, I went to sea when I was 13, until I was 13 and a half, and in sailing barges. And then I was apprenticed to the Thames, so I became a freeman of the Thames. And when I was working on the Thames, I was working as a lighterman, waterman and lighterman, which is, you know, barges are lighters, and you used to be like a glorified truck driver, except you didn't have an engine. You got pulled about by tug.
Do you sing Stormy Weather, Boys?
Yeah.
Isn't that from that area?
Yeah.
It's maybe, you know.
Actually, the bloke who stole me with the boys, the bloke who wrote that was my first skipper.
Oh, really?
Bloke called Bob Roberts, yeah. He's sailing barge skipper. I'd say
it's all true. The song's all true, isn't it?
Well, it is in some senses. I mean, a bit about when he went
no up ghosts.
Base over Apex and gets his naked caught in main chop block. I don't think that happened.
No, but, maybe not.
But he was a sailing barge skipper who was recorded by the BBC, and he had a welter of songs. And he taught me a lot of songs.
So you learned. Okay, we have to take a break. But when I come back, I just want to talk about that a little bit more. Some of these other places where you collected songs, because I mean, we didn't even, you know, when we talked about family, but you know, beyond there, it sounds like on the barge and on some of these different places.
Well, during the Blitz, you know, we got bombed out. The first place we went to, the next house we had to move in, was a woman called Mrs. McCall, who was a friend of my mother. She was Scottish, and she had a lodger. Or a partner, you call them lodger.
Yeah.
And she knew a welter of Scottish songs. And Charlie McDougall knew loads of Scottish poetry. And so from her, I learned a lot of Scots songs. And from him, I learned got my interest in Robert Burns.
Okay, we're going to be right back here on Local Folk. I'm speaking with Danny Spooner, and it's a pleasure to be speaking with you, Danny. And we just, I have to do some announcements and some other things, but we'll be right back on Local Folk.
So back to Jenny, and let me just read. This is a recording that I'm playing. I'd never heard of it. I think. Steve called it the Indian Neck Festival. So he met and interviewed Danny Spooner down there. And what a fascinating interview. So I'm just going to read a few things of underwriting and a community calendar item, and then we'll go right back to the interview. Programming on Portsmouth Community Radio is made possible by you, our members, and by Piscataqua Savings Bank, providing financial services and support to the Portsmouth community since 1877. And by Coast, serving the Seacoast region of New Hampshire and Berwick, Maine, with safe and affordable bus transportation since 1982. Find routes, schedules, and learn how to ride at coastbus.org. And from the community calendar, the first Wednesday of every month is Acoustic Jam Night with Chip at Rice Public Library in Kittery. These sessions take place from 6 to 8 p.m. More information is at 207-439-1553. Now let's get right back to that interview. So here we go. This is Steve Kerrigan down at Indian Neck Festival interviewing Danny Spooner.
Hey, this is Steve Kerrigan, and you're listening to Local Folk, and we are back. And I'm speaking with Danny Spooner, and he's just been blowing me away with some of these stories. You know, I mean, you know, he grew up with the music. But it was more than that. I mean, his grandparents were performing with them. It was just something that happened in their family, which is not something that happens all the time to people. But that, I think, helped for you to develop an interest in the music. But you didn't know that it was anything beyond normal, right?
No, my dad was in a wheelchair. He was crippled. But he used to be a jazz pianist. So he used to play jazz, so we were used to hearing him play jazz on a piano. And my mum used to sing. She played fife, tin whistle. My grandmothers used to sing, and so they were singing rural songs. My mother's mother sang rural songs. My father's mother sang songs from Ireland, which is where she was from. And so all of this stuff was going in, but it was songs. It was just songs.
It was
so I was likely to listen to Ella Fitzgerald or something like this, you know.
Yep.
And I didn't know this was folk music. None of them called it folk music.
So, I mean, it was just music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just music. And when I came to Australia, somebody took me to a folk song club.
Okay.
Where they were singing songs, which I grew up with. And they're calling them a folk song.
Yeah.
Because for me, if I think about, I mean, those songs that I was learning from my family, what I'm listening to on the wireless and on record is the Kingston Trio, Pete Seeger and the Weavers.
Mm-hmm.
And people are putting this on the radio and they're saying, this is a folk song from the Weavers called Drill Ye Tarriers or something like this. So for me, folk music came from America.
Came from America?
Yeah, I thought folk music's American music.
But you know what I've heard from Irish, from people that grew up in Ireland, mm-hmm. is that their old traditional music, many of them weren't really thinking too much about it. It was that stuff that Grandma used to sing.
Yeah.
But then it got popularized in America, came back over to Ireland, and
all of a sudden they're relearning their own stuff
from
people from America.
Yeah,
I found
that to be quite an interesting spin on
same
on
sort
things.
Of thing happened in Australia. There were young kids who came out with their families who in later life are going to folk song clubs and listening to Irish music and going home and saying, well, why didn't we listen to this when we were kids? And
right.
The parents saying, but why didn't we listen to that shit? You know, that's old stuff. That's what the old people did. We're here. We've got a new modern life. You know, you drive a motor car. Yeah, but I like the music.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of it can translate over. I mean, part of the issue is that not all of the things that were happening then are happening now.
That's
and
right.
So there's a slight disconnect.
Yep.
But, you know, the human experience or the human, you know, ups and downs, you know, happen in many different ways.
That's right. And in very different times.
And in different times. And so in a lot of ways.
Still trying to earn a living. However, whether you're digging in the field, working in the factory or driving a computer.
So you were a boat guy, though. So let's get back to this. Did you say that you were? It wasn't the military. You were a barge man.
Yeah, bargeman. I started off on.
You said it's a little bit like being a glorified truck driver.
Well, my apprenticeship. When I first went, I went in the sailing barge.
Yeah,
and that was like a barge with sails.
Okay,
and lovely old.
Like the gondola? Do you know the gondola in Portsmouth? Basically, it's a rectangular thing with a sail on it.
Well, it was a little bit more sophisticated.
Okay.
So it would see Thames Spritsel barges.
Okay.
They would go around the coast and all that.
Oh,
they were
all
lovely,
right.
Lovely old boats.
Okay. Well,
nothing startling fast or anything like that. But.
Yeah.
And so I was doing that for a little while, and Bob said, look, he gave me a trial. The story is I went down there because my dad was in a wheelchair and I thought, I've got to go work.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Right.
I was all right at school, but there was more need for me to go work. So I went down to the dock and I went on a sailing barge and I knew that they took on people. Do you need a deckhand? No, I don't, but the fella down there does. So I said, oh, okay, thanks. And he said, but you've got to be 15. So I said, oh, yeah, right. So I aged a year and a half in about 50 yards. Went on with Bob, and he said, look, I said, I'll give you a trial. And I'll give you a month's trial, and then we'll see how we go. So I did my month's trial, and he finally said, okay, son, he said, I'll take you on, and I'll see if I can get you an apprenticeship. And I know you're not 15.
Well, all right. Busted.
Yeah. But he was a good man. Bloody good skipper.
The question is then, he was a skipper first and a songwriter second?
Well, he sang traditional songs, but it came about that he would write about his own life. And so the Stormy Weather Boys and that sort of, the Hoyley Rig and all that sort of stuff that he did. It were all part of what he did. And later, he started to get invited to go and sing in folk song clubs and things like that.
Okay, okay. And so, this is how the people that started to hear him that weren't on the boat.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay.
And he was quite old by the time. Not really old, but he was quite old by the time that.
Here's a question for you, though. Did you sing the songs on the boat? I mean, did you sing work songs on the boat to do work?
He would always sing if there was a job that could handle a song.
Okay.
That would make... Because...
So first of all, there were jobs. Okay.
We were pulling sails up and walking around a capstan and all of that sort of thing, warping this thing in and out or pulling it up over your shoulder. And he was like so many of those old guys, you know. The job was made easier by working rhythmically, and singing a song always takes away a lot of the pain, you know. You're doing something pleasurable while you're doing something horrible, you know, particularly pumping, you know, jig pump, trying to pump the bleeding water out of them, you know, can go on for hours. You know,
hours?
Yeah, yeah. So he would always say, you know, Gerald started just dive into a song. So
you just start to make up lyrics as you go?
No, never wanted to do that. I was so, from then I'm still the same. I don't sing terribly many contemporary songs. I have done a record CD of contemporary Australian songs, and I called it the Emerging Tradition because they are songs that I think will go into the tradition.
Okay.
Songs by like people like Eric Bogle and other people less well known than him. But the thing about them is that they're songs that are very like traditional songs.
Okay, so they're written a la
in that style. And
yeah.
I appeal to them.
You appeal to them?
No, I meant they appeal to me.
Oh, they appeal to you.
And because of their nearness to the tradition, whereas there are a lot of contemporary songs that I just wouldn't sing.
Okay.
Not that they're bad songs, but they just don't do nothing for me.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of singing, we should at least have one more song. Maybe two.
Well, what sort of a song would you like? There's also, we could use a concertina.
Ah, yeah, we'll go over to the concertina here. That's what we got. A concertina looks like an octagonal accordion, just in case anybody
lovely
out there is...
thing, yeah. By the margin of the ocean, one pleasant evening in the month of June, the feather nesting songsters, their charming note did sweetly croon. I overheard a female concerning in great grief and woe, conversing with young Bony Pat about the bonny bunch of roses, oh. And out spake young Napoleon, and he took his mother by the hand. Oh, mother, pray be patient till I am able to command. And I'll raise a terrible army, and through tremendous dangers go, and in spite of all the universe, I'll capture the bonny bunch of roses, oh. Ah, son, don't be so venturesome, for in England there are hearts of oak. There's England, Ireland, and Scotland,
and their unity has never been broke. Dear son, recall your father in Santalina, he lies low, and you shall follow after. If you try for bonny bunch of roses, oh. He took 500,000 men and kings likewise to bear his throng. He was so well provided for, enough to sweep the world along. But when he came to Moscow, he was overcame by the frost and snow, and Moscow was a-blazing. So he lost a bonny bunch of roses, oh. And out spake young Napoleon, "Oh, mother, make my dying bed. Had I lived, I might have been clever. But now I droop my youthful head. But when my bones are mouldering and a weeping willow o'er me grow, the deeds of brave Napoleon will prick the bonny bunch of roses, oh."
Excellent. Question for you.
Yeah.
Bunch of roses, bonny bunch of roses.
It was a name that was given to the British Isles. Yeah, but it was a name, I think maybe the Irish gave to them.
So what about the song Blood Red Roses? Does that have anything to do with that?
Blood Red Roses was the name that the sailors used to give to soldiers with their red coats when they were coming aboard the ships.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
It was a naval term for Marines and...
Okay, so when they're referring to Rose, though, they're referring to...
In this instance,
it's England, but in other instances...
Main countries of England, because, I don't know why, really, because the Roses are Lancashire and Yorkshire. The counties of Lancashire and Yorkshire are the red and the white rose.
Oh, okay.
A bunch of roses was always...
So it alludes to a lot of different things, but mostly, okay, it's a especially English thing. I need to talk... We're running out of time. We are. Unfortunately, but Danny, we're listening to Danny Spooner right now. He's been chatting with us, and I need to let you all know that he's going to be playing Memorial Day weekend, not in Portsmouth, but New York, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so it's a little bit of a drive, but hop in your car. Memorial Day weekend. See Danny Spooner with John Kirk and Trish Miller and Joy Bennett and Chris Caldaway. Yes. And it's Memorial Day weekend, folkmusicny.org. Now, Danny, you've been up to the Portsmouth Maritime Festival. It was a number of years ago,
Is
it only once or has it been more than once?
I went to the festival once, but I was up in Portsmouth, I think, the last time I was over it, just to go up to the Press Club to sing at the folk club.
Okay. So you're here from Australia and you're doing a tour right now, though.
No.
And where is it bringing you? Is it bringing you up north at all?
I'm going up as far as Albany, but New York, Boston... Washington.
Oh, you're going to Boston?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And where's that going to be at? Do you recall? Or
I do the 11th and the 13th of July, Greater Boston Folk Song Society.
Oh, really?
Can give you the information you need for that.
Well, what we can do is I'll post it on my Facebook page when mm-hmm. I post it. And I can probably, because this is pre-recorded, I'll probably mm-hmm. Put it on close to that mm-hmm. so that people could travel down there and see it if they want to. Do you have a website?
Yes. Just DannySpooner.com.
DannySpooner.com, and it's just like it sounds, right?
Yeah.
Take a wild guess. You'll get it right. And if you don't get it right, then you're thinking too hard. That's what I would say. Can you be found on Facebook or anything like that?
No. Well, actually, funnily enough, one of my students started a Facebook for me.
Are you a teacher?
But I don't even know how to get onto it.
Okay. Well, that's okay.
I was a long time ago.
You were a teacher?
As I say, I became a... academic.
You said academic. Was it history or was it music?
History, literature, and philosophy, comparative religions, and that sort of stuff.
Oh, really?
Well, it was via folk music that got me very interested in that sort of reading.
Gee, you know, all right, well, we can't even get into it, because I'd love to know how folk music brought you to comparative religion
and philosophy. Many of the old songs, one of mm-hmm. the very old songs in England, have got religious connotations deep down.
Okay.
Scratch the surface and you'll find sort of, John Barleycorn was the crucified corn god.
Really?
Who was killed and brought back to life again the following year. And
just like barley?
Exactly. That's what it was about. So perhaps next time we can talk about that sort of stuff.
I would love to do that, and I have very much enjoyed having you on the program, as do, I'm sure, my listeners.
I hope so.
And, that's all we have for tonight. So we'll have to see you next time on Local Folk.
And that was a pre-recorded interview that Local Folk's host, Steve Kerrigan, had with Danny Spooner a couple of weeks ago down at the Indian Neck Festival.